Coming up next on Lutheran Radio UK,
The Lutheran Inquisitor, examining pressing issues and their ramifications for the Church today.
And now, the second half of the examination of the body in the theology of Martin Luther, with your host, Pastor John Ehlers.
Hello and welcome to the Lutheran Inquisitor. I'm John Ehlers, your host, and I'm pastor of Christ Lutheran Church, located in Orpington, Kent, which is a southeastern suburb of London. I'd like to encourage you to come along and join us for worship every Sunday morning at 10:30. And if you don't live in our area, then please, by all means, go to our website, lutheran.co.uk. Click on the directory to find the nearest Lutheran church to where you live. We'd also like to take this opportunity to thank you for all of your prayers and for your generous financial contributions. For these help keep Lutheran Radio on the air, and we deeply appreciate them and give thanks to God for your kindness, your support, and your generosity. Today we're very excited to welcome Dr. Charles Courtwright. He's an associate professor of theology at Wisconsin Lutheran College in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, in the USA. Dr. Courtwright did his PhD work at Marquette University, where his dissertation was on This Bag of Maggots, Luther's Theology on the Human Body. His dissertation will be appearing in the near future in a series commemorating the upcoming 500th anniversary of the posting of the 95 Theses. So we encourage you to keep your eye out for this very interesting book, which will be hitting our shelves in the next few years. We'd like to welcome Dr. Courtwright, who will be talking to us on this topic, Luther's Theology of the Human Body. Dr. Courtwright, welcome to Lutheran Radio UK.
Thank you very much.
In his pastoral work, because Luther always viewed himself as I think, pastor first, can you continue to fill us in a little bit more on this subject of how death really did shape his understanding of the body and its role within our life?
I want to give right attribution. I think Timothy Wengert, in his volume on the pastoral Luther, makes the statement, or I think it's in that volume at least, makes the statement that this side of Luther is one of the great unexplored areas, and we're just starting to really get a handle on the how important it is to remember Luther as pastor and not just as reformer or teacher or even as husband and father, for that matter. But it's his pastoral side and the letters in particular that he writes, all this correspondence to people, and not you know, the great names of Europe at the time, but people who have just written to him, and they receive responses that reveal his kinship, his sense of great kinship with the human condition. He shares it, obviously. He's not above it by any means. And indeed, his own personal experiences, both with his many illnesses and then the experiences of death within the family. He almost lost Katie at one point, for example, also. Equip him in ways that the pastoral Luther is so winsome, I think. You see another complete picture of the man as opposed to some of his strong polemical writing, for example, which usually gets more attention or is more known. I'm thinking of a woman that he wrote, for example, whose husband had committed suicide. And in keeping with, you know, the normal pastoral practice of the day, or the idea that you would bury a suicide was not countenanced, certainly not in sacred ground. You wouldn't bury them in the churchyard or something like this. Luther will hear nothing of this, and writes, in fact, a letter to this woman that comforts her and urges her to take comfort that her husband was obviously not in his right mind, and urging her to leave things to God. So, you know, this kind of tenderness, I guess I'd say, tenderness on the part of Luther is something that comes out especially in the pastoral letters and advice that he gives to people who are suffering, either illnesses or death or threat of the plague or other travails of the body.
And again, you mentioned travails of the body. Luther himself had many maladies and suffered from chronic illnesses. How did that help him come to an understanding or of the reality of suffering in life and in our physical existence?
Yeah, I mentioned this, his term, maggot sack. When I first started my research, that phrase, of course, he uses in a very famous statement as he returns from the Wartburg, urging his hearers not to take on these party labels. And so he's saying, don't call yourselves after Luther, but let us call ourselves after Christ, whose children we are. And in that regard, he makes this famous statement, who am I, poor maggot sack that I am, that the people of God should call themselves after my wretched name. Well, that phrase, you know, captured my attention. And with the help of what we can do nowadays in terms of electronic searching of Luther's text, I was able to trace through his usage of that. And I was surprised. I thought it was kind of the typical outrageous Lutherisms that we can sometimes point to, or that it becomes somewhat famous. And it is not that at all. He uses the phrase maggot sack most often in his sermons, when he's being absolutely serious with his congregation about the nature of the human body. And that this body, which is subject to disease and decay and debilitation, we should not care for it in the one sense that, I should be afraid of the fact that God is going to take me sooner or later, that my body is going to wear out. He says this is part of what we are as the children of Adam. But at the same time, God has redeemed the body. And that in his sermon series, this rather complex sermon series on 1 Corinthians 15, the great resurrection chapter, you get a sense of just how much this means to him, and that he holds this out to people. So we're not to care for the maggot sack in the sense that the body, as we watch it, subject to all the injury and death and illness and so on, we shouldn't be concerned because God has redeemed this body and will raise it up to be like Christ's glorious body. And I think he sees that very issue, in fact, more in terms of a restoration of what God intended than anything else. We are going to be in resurrection what God meant us to be at the beginning with Adam. And this is Luther's great hope, I believe. But it is salted and enhanced by his own experiences that were. I had no idea getting started with research how much he really had gone through in terms of illnesses, injuries, constant ringing of the ears, just on and on and on. It's an amazing thing when you stop realizing then over against it the productivity of the man. But he really did suffer a great deal throughout his life, starting from fairly young on.
Now, how did this suffering then filter in through his theology of the cross, do you think?
He sees it as prima facie evidence of the fact that we live under the cross. The body, the human life, is something that is going to be subject to the cross. And this is, of course, not just talking about human troubles and so forth, but that which comes to us as God is shaping and forming us for eternity. This is all the kind of experience that the human person, the redeemed child of God, must expect also within his or her body. He makes an interesting, or I think a very fun quote, in fact, in this regard. We must always remember, he says, that we are guests at an inn where the innkeeper is a real rascal. And he's talking, of course, of Satan. And this is our life. We're only here as guests, but the keeper of the inn is someone who is out to cheat us or to go at us because of our faith. And this includes them, the body, as much as the soul, because they are inseparably joined in the one person that we are as a human person.
Now, do you think his understanding of the incarnation shaped his understanding of our fleshly existence?
It does. I did, you know, in actuality, because of just limitations, I did not take up a lot of the discussion of the incarnation of Christ and how Jesus' incarnation also, you know, how he shares in our weaknesses, yet without sin. So it's not an area I actually did explore a great deal. I certainly have, you know, feelings towards that in terms of having read in Luther that he certainly does see in Jesus, in the fact that our Lord takes on our flesh, both the indications of the weaknesses of the body, the limitations of it that Jesus in his humility also takes on, but then also the great hope of the body, our bodies as children of God, that Christ is the first fruits of that resurrection, obviously, as Paul says, and we should look to him in that regard then for our as the first fruits, as the pattern, as the one, we will be like as we also join eternity then. So, I don't have a lot of direct information. I didn't trace that aspect as much in my research. So I'll have to leave it there, I guess.
Okay. But you keep coming back to Luther and his hope of the resurrection, his hope of the restoration of the resurrected body. And I do think that is a wonderful thing. And it's something that perhaps the church has lost sight of in our time. Can you help us understand his understanding of what the resurrection entailed and its physical existence?
The main place that he speaks about the resurrection of the body is in this sermon series that he preaches actually before the death of Magdalena. So this would be in the 1530s. And it's a very difficult series. I kind of wonder, you know, what the congregation's experience was listening to a sermon. These were not done in the morning. They were done in the afternoon. And it was a long series. Very complicated language being used in it. Very, very dense in terms of his preaching. But this, I guess there are some 17 sermons that it takes him to get through the chapter. In that connection, he certainly does lead his hearers though to understand the resurrection as the great hope. This is what we're aiming for, and that it certainly is, you know, the body is not insignificant in this regard. It is the very focus. And that without the body's resurrection, we can't be, because to be is to be human, to be redeemed human is to be body and soul together, not just soul. You know, we don't go flitting off to heaven and then not care about the body. In my flesh, I shall see God. So he talks about the body in terms of the resurrection in some fairly interesting ways that I think are very, very winsome. I mentioned earlier his viewpoint, I think, comes across pretty strongly that resurrection is not something new in God's plan, but is rather restoration of what he intended for Adam and Eve. Luther speculates that Adam and Eve, had they not fallen into sin, would not necessarily have just continued to live on this earth by any means. But after a certain time, like Enoch, they would have been translated into heaven and would take on the spiritual body, which is no longer subject to the kinds of frailties or even the necessities, even in the perfect creation, that the bodies of Adam and Eve, they had to eat, for example. Bodily functions that are natural to the body would cease or be no need for this any longer in the spiritual body. And Luther sees this then, as he's talking about 1 Corinthians 15, as really God restoring the original plan that he had for humanity, as opposed to being some kind of plan B that he has to institute because of the fall into sin.
Now, in your research, what do you think that Luther has bequeathed to the Lutheran Church in regard to their understanding and theology of the human body?
Well, I think that Lutherans in their best moments are body people. You know, we I think Lutherans have a sense of certainly the foolishness of the body on the one hand. Certainly we recognize the limitations. We see the ravages of sin, and we certainly mourn those things and also properly repent. At the same time, we rejoice in the gift of the body and the gifts to the body. Good food, good drink. This is not something that Lutherans shy away from, and it's not something that we're not going to preach overindulgence by something, but the gifts that are given to the body to enjoy in this earth, and physicality just in general, is something that I think we do share with our namesake. The gift of sexuality in marriage is certainly something too that Lutherans properly celebrate and properly uphold as God's plan. It's not something that's dirty again or not to be treated with or not to be spoken of, but rather is forthrightly faced as both a gift and then also as trial sometimes because of sin. So I think this just general joy of life and general remembrance of the body as God's gift, and again, part of me, not just something that's going to disappear or is unimportant in terms of who I am or what I am, but is integral to who I am and what I am, and that God also cares for the body, even to the point, or especially to the point, in fact, of redeeming the body, even for eternity. So I think these are all Luther emphases about the body that I think that the church in its good moments, in its best moments, certainly do share with him.
We're talking about Luther's understanding of creation, but how does that relate to his general understanding of the human body?
Luther's discussion of creation is interesting and important, I believe, in that he stresses, of course, the word, and take that in the most pregnant sense that we possibly can as theologians, that it's God's creative word, obviously, that brings all things into being out of nothing. Luther certainly holds to the church's doctrine of the creatio ex nihilo, the creation from nothing, but that nothing is not something outside of God, it's nothing, and God brings out of nothing all that is. And the most important thing, I think, about Luther's view of creation is God's continuing care for it. It's not, he's very careful, and in fact very strong in his language against any notion of God as the watchmaker who creates this thing, sets the watch, and then lets it go on its own. But that takes in its utmost seriousness that in him we live and move and have our being. This comes down to the human person, I think, in particular, for example, in procreation, which Luther will talk about, that as husbands and wives are brought together also in the sexual union, the creation of children, they are empowered in their bodies by God, and that God is actually working with them to create, the children that God blesses them with. This point of view of seeing God's integral, ongoing creative work is a Luther emphasis that's worth noting then for the human body in general, or in specifics, and regarding creation in general. God is not a God far off, but is here and dealing with his creation in that same relational way that we see talked about in Genesis 1, that God creates things out of nothing in relationship with him, so that human beings as the crown of that creation are his instruments that he uses to keep his ongoing work of creation going. He could do it without us, but he does it through us, which gives the human, human life, and in particular the role of husband and wife or father and mother, a dignity, certainly, and also that we're actually partakers of the divine work at this. And I think that's a very winsome thought, that's helpful, in fact, to underscore the sanctity of marriage and the sanctity of children, the gift of children within marriage, and what's actually going on here. It's not a husband and wife's choosing as much as God also working and making them his instruments.
You mentioned the sanctity. Again, I think we could assume that Luther held life as sacred and wanted to guard and protect that as best we can?
Yes, very much so. His children are his joy, although he's realistic about them. I mean, sometimes I think of one anecdote. He had young Martin on his lap, and the baby did what babies do. And as he's handing him off to Katie, he says, "So we treat God." as a parent, he certainly sees the foibles of childhood, but never in the sense that these are bothers or anything less than gifts of God. I think that's very important. You find in Luther the family man, the husband, the father, as much as anywhere else in his life, you see him centered around God and his gifts there, in his thoughts and his actions and his values.
Now, as associate professor of theology at Wisconsin Lutheran College, can you tell us what your responsibilities are, and could you tell us a little bit about the Wisconsin Lutheran College?
The college is actually quite young. We are only just celebrating our 40th year of founding, and it's an undergraduate institution. We serve about 1,000 students, and the students major in, it's a comprehensive college in the sense that we have a number of pre-professional and liberal arts majors on campus. My own work is in the theology department, and our department is, we're fairly small. There's only 5 of us in the department, and so we're all pretty much generalists, I'd have to say. We all teach in various parts. I generally teach mostly in the area of Old Testament, so I teach courses like Survey of Old Testament or the Hebrew poetry and wisdom literature, the Hebrew prophets, and so forth. I do have a course I get to teach on Luther and his thought, which I enjoy very much. We run a seminar with students. The college exists then to provide college education, undergraduate education, with a thorough allegiance to Christ and to the Lutheran confessions. The college serves the wider needs of the church by providing students who are, we hope, will be leaders, servants, and in their congregations. Interestingly, I should say, the college does not provide, and the theology department is not about, pre-seminary or seminary training. That's done in my church body at a separate institution, Martin Luther College, which is in Minnesota. So none of our students who take all these theology courses are necessarily aiming at professional church work, but do take the theology courses that are part of their general education requirements as part of the college's mission and dedication to Christian education and to producing a new generation of lay leaders, I guess we'd say, in churches and in society.
And we are really delighted in the Evangelical Lutheran Church of England to have an affiliation with your study abroad program, where students from your college can come and study at Westfield House for a semester. And that is really beginning to grow and blossom. And we give thanks to God for that and continue working with your college and representatives of that college to make sure that that relationship continues to grow and well into the future. And we are very thankful to you for being our guest on Lutheran Radio today. We pray God's richest blessings upon you in your work as you are the Associate Professor of Theology at the Wisconsin Lutheran College. Dr. Courtwright, thank you very much again.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Lutheran Inquisitor with Pastor John Ehlers. If you have any questions or comments about the issues raised in this program, send an email to info@lutheranradio.co.uk. The podcast of this show is available from our website. Check our program online and stay tuned.